session number 27346, reel 3.
Robert Thornton, reel 3. We were just discussing one of your abilities was your ability to find your way back to the carrier. Now, obviously, this is very important for a navigator of any aircraft. What were the techniques that you would use, or were there any methods that you've devised that would help you find that carrier, which must be a very small space in a very large ocean?
I had practiced various methods that I might have to use to direct the aircraft back to the carrier. And I made little scripts of what I might have to do. And those scripts included the potential track that I may have to use. And provided that I kept my nose to the grindstone, as it were, and shifted the mathematics and the paperwork, I would be able to get back. And I think it probably happened about 3 times. And each time, there we were. We got back.
Is there always a danger, though, when you're returning to carrier, that the carrier may have taken evasive action or moved? And if it does do that, how would you try and locate it then?
I don't think it ever occurred, because the carrier was generally part of a convoy, and the fact that the convoy and the carrier were not joined up to one another didn't matter very much to me, as long as I could find the carrier. And I could. I was very good at finding carriers. And incidentally, something that you don't know about yet, but I became a night fighter. And that was to come in about 6 months' time. And I became such a night fighter that they kept me and said, "You stay in Edinburgh," which is where the nearest airfield was for night fighters, "and you train the next ones in." Because I had techniques. I'm very mathematical, and so I had once I did get lost, and but the ship, we'd got a wind connection which had been given us by the accompanying, there's a guy accompanying you, giving you wind directions, and he was a right wanker. And I had been completely taken off my track, but I thought, well, I'll have a go with the ship and see if they'll take us back, because you never knew, they might say no, but they said yes.
You said that you were operating to Murmansk. Did you go ashore in Murmansk at all?
In Russia?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Oh, it was fundamental. as I understand it, there had been no convoy get through for a very long time. The old ships that were being used by British aircraft were hopeless. And here we were with the American aircraft, brand new. And so the Navy naturally said, "Let's do this. Let's get through to Russia." And so we got through there. And there were one or two I didn't myself become involved in any fights, but there were one or two fights which resulted in German aircraft being destroyed, not British or American. And they had not had anyone for about 6 months when we got there, and they went mad, and they parties, let's do this, do this, and so we had a terrific couple of nights in Russia, and 20 or 30 miles away was a big German airfield, but they didn't come near us, and I think they were very sensible.
What impressions did you make of the Russians that you met?
Well, the best impression I had was of a Russian girl. I don't drink, so the big party going on, they're all getting drunk, and I thought, no, not for me, I'll go for a walk. So I went for a walk in the dark, jet black. I've got very good night vision. And out of the darkness comes a very, very attractive Russian lady, armed with guns. They all had guns. And so we stopped, and quite difficult because she didn't speak any English, or not very much, and I certainly didn't have any Russian. And but we had a chat about this and that, and then she said, I want your gun. So I said, you can't have my gun. You can have anything else, but you can't have the gun. So she smiled and put her gun away. Very, very interesting. It was, she was very pretty. Yes, I think we could have had a good time if we only weren't leaving the next day.
But you had some contact with the Russians, because I know some of the convoys, they had very little contact with Russian personnel, but you sound like you were...
I had no contact with the Russian personnel. I could have had, but I didn't go to the party. I went for the girl.
So you'd done your couple of trips to the Arctic. What was the next stage? Because did you leave the carrier at that stage once you'd done those couple of trips up to there?
I had three or four trips with the carrier, and then there was a feeling that I should be staying on in the Navy. They'd already made one or two noises in that connection. And I have a feeling, I just have the feeling that they didn't want me to get killed. And the rest of the squadron went to the Middle East, no, not the, the FAR, they went the FAR trip. And I was directed to night flying, and which I thought was really fascinating. And that was flying at 25,000 feet, and again using the American aircraft, and a different pilot who didn't have much idea about navigation or things like that. And I after a while, after a couple of runs, the Navy approached me and said, you can have a career here. I said, I don't think so. But there was definitely night flying was the big deal. 25,000 feet. Having the ability to do the mathematics, that because there was a lot of mathematics, especially if you wanted to catch the German and he not catch you. And so I went through that phase, which was in an airfield just outside Edinburgh.
With the night fighting, was the aircraft equipped with a radar at all at that stage?
Yes, yes, but not. I didn't use it. I was directing. You see, what happened was that all the events in connection with night flying took place in an area of about 20 miles. So the need for big navigation was not the point. The real need was to come in at the right height and to know the moment at which you're going to turn down or up. And it was very enjoyable for somebody like me. But I had made up my mind in any case I wasn't going to stay.
Were you in doing any instructing at all at that period?
Yes. Yes, there were people who, or there were pilots who needed to get the message. And I did that. In fact, I think I was, there may have been another one like me, but mostly I did it. So pilots would come on this night run, and fascinating game to come in at a particular height and know you've got the enemy in front of you and he's going the wrong way for him.
Are there any things that you have to be aware of when you're flying at night that are different than flying in the daytime?
Yeah, you've certainly got to be available of winds, and you've certainly got to be available of what might be in your way, and therefore, if you can meet the enemy at 20,000 feet, that's the one you want to meet, and he ain't going to know. And you're going to come up behind him. And it's quite funny stuff. And but the Navy were keen on me about this. And but it didn't come to anything because I didn't want it.
But were they developing and using experimental tactics then at that
yes.
stage
when yes.
you were involved?
Yes. Yeah. There were one or two people who were doing it. There was nobody who had the technique I had at all. I had been doing a lot of flying by that time, and.
But was your technique based on a lot of the time on the mathematical basis?
Yes.
How to intercept at
yes.
a certain height at a certain
yes.
level.
Absolutely. And the Navy didn't tell me it. I did it.
It's interesting because obviously with something like that. It's almost like they should have paid more attention to the mathematics of
yes.
much of the
yes.
of navigating or applying tactics
yes.
at night.
Yes, they were. Of course, one of the things that I've never forgotten is that you know something, and the moment you know it, you know it. So don't blether about it. You know it, and. And therefore, they gave me a very good pilot, and between us, we knew it. And other people could come and sample this. And but there were deaths. People flew into hills. And again, I'm not good at flying into hills. I don't believe in them. And so they said, you've got a job in the Navy for life. And I said, no thanks. And the war was nearly over. And what's more, there was a very great admiral not an admiral, an officer of great repute. And I'm just trying to remember his name. He was part of the king's group of men. And he was a very able man, and he had the most beautiful daughter. And she fell in love with me. She was looking after our kit and so on. And so all this was happening around Edinburgh, so I used to take her to the opera in Edinburgh. And I think if I'd said, marry me, she would have gone along with that. Whether he would have done is another matter. But I didn't ask her, and I wanted to get on with
it. Sounds like you were ready to get back to civilian life.
Yes, I needed to make money.
One of the things we talked about earlier is, what do you feel the lessons that you learned from your service with the Fleet Air Arm during the Second World War are?
It's not easy. You can fool yourself. I saw lots of people do silly things and do it at sea, do it on land, and I thought, it's not for me. If I found myself flying with a pilot who did silly things, I didn't want to know about him. And I suppose I was preparing myself to do something else. Oh yes, I've forgotten to mention I had decided to qualify as an accountant. And I started to a course, and I won a scholarship at sea. it didn't cost me very much. So at the end of the war, I was very nearly at the point where I could become an accountant, and which I did. And then I decided that that was all right, but it's not for me, accountancy. And I'll do something else, but I'll be an accountant as well.
So did you feel that the service that you had gave you some, or reinforced personal qualities?
Oh yes, oh, without a doubt. I admire it tremendously. And today, still,